it's time for real fashion on Pop Off with Mary Jane Pop.
And welcome to our Friday edition of Pop Off. I hope you're having a wonderful day and a wonderful week. And you know what? Just a wonderful life. I'm glad to have you with us today. Oh, by the way, got to let you know, this is our last day. This is the last day for Pop Off on BBS Radio. But I do want to thank Don and Doug. They have been absolutely super. It's been a fun ride. But it's just like anything in life. You know, it's always, there's something to move on. You got to move on. And I think the universe always has something in mind for all of us and what will be in store. But I'm also sure that always paths will cross one another when you have good relationships with the good people. By the way, I want to let you know the book, Marilyn, Joe, and Me, my book, Marilyn, Joe, and Me, is up on Amazon as we speak, also on Barnes & Noble. They don't have the cover up there yet, which is driving me crazy, but they said they will have it up there shortly. But this is one book you don't want to pass up. They're doing pre-sales on it. It won't be sent out till October, but the pre-sales are being done because we are expecting some wonderful things from this book. It talk about spiritual. I mean, this was a spiritual journey for me, seriously, a seven-year spiritual journey of talking to a lady who knew Marilyn Monroe, who is the niece of Joe DiMaggio, who had touch with people like Barbara Stanwyck and Peggy Lee and Carol Channing, some of the wonderful folks of Hollywood. But these are not the stories of Hollywood. These are the stories of people and what they had as far as feelings and what they were really, really about, the down deep inside part of what Hollywood was all about, and that's the people. And I think you'll find it fascinating. So the name of the book, again, is Marilyn, Joe, and Me. June DiMaggio tells it like it was, too. Yours truly, Mary Jane Pop. It is the last show, so we're going to give it a really smashing, wonderful information for you to have so that it makes your life better. That's what Pop Off has always been about. That's what Pop Off will always be about. And I also do want to let you know, if you go to popoff.com, which is my website, popoff.com, you'll have more information. Pop Off will be back on the air in September on Cable Radio Network. And all the details will be there as the month goes on, but it won't be till September 1st. Okay, it is time to move right along and to get to the point of what is happening today and the fun things. And if you're planning to go to the movies, well, you know, you might want to consider what our own movie reviewer has to say. I tell you, Saturday night is a big night, but you know, almost any night for the movies, but you want to make sure that you have something good to see before you spend the kind of money that you're going to be spending over there, I'll tell you. So let's all go to the movies and we'll get ourselves a treat, or maybe trick, or downright deadly. But never fear, Deborah's here, the Hollywood diva, the movie maven, the lady who calls the big screen shots just for the hell of it. Hello, Deborah.
Hey, it's always a trick or treat at the movies. You're right.
It is a crapshoot because we see these trailers, and of course, when they put the publicity out, you know, it's got to be the best thing since sliced bread. But that ain't always true.
Well, this week I saw three of the latest releases. Let's start with Talladega Nights.
Oh, which... please. Now, you know, I love race cars. I really do. I love NASCAR. I love the old-fashioned dirt track, et cetera, because that's how I grew up back in the Midwest. But I'll tell you, if I were a NASCAR driver, and I just saw the trailer. I didn't see the movie, so I want to get your read on this. But if I, just from the trailer, I'd be embarrassed to think that that's what they think about me.
Yeah, well, this was a... I was sitting there, and half of the audience was laughing. I wasn't. It stars Will Ferrell, John C. Reilly, and Sacha Baron Cohen, who's a French actor.
Mm-hmm.
And Will Ferrell, he plays a race car driver who seems to be so dumb that he doesn't know when he's being dumped on.
Oh.
And especially when his best friend, played by Mr. Reilly, steals his wife and sons away from him. And perhaps it's because while speeding around the NASCAR racetrack, he has a horrific accident that makes him delusional. Well, that could have helped to make him dumb, but he showed signs of being dumb before that.
Well, I think Will Ferrell's a little delusional anyway.
Yeah. Well, I think this movie shows a real lack of parental guidance from his race car driving moronic father who deserts him as a child, and a mother who doesn't seem to know right from wrong. I mean, both parents look like uneducated, emotionally immature people.
Aye.
And these people are having children, and these children are appearing in this movie. NASCAR drivers appear to be overly macho men. So because of that, it is funny when French actor Sacha Baron Cohen plays a flamboyantly gay NASCAR racer.
Oh, yeah, really. Now, that part I think I would find funny. Okay?
Yeah, that part was the funny part. And he wins the race to become the best car driver on the track over all the macho men. So since the world of car racing has become a gigantic popularity event, this is interesting to see. And I'm sure a lot of the fans will embrace this, although I found it rather a low-class, crude, lewd comedy.
Well, you know, I don't mind laughing at oneself, but, you know, because I laugh at football fans, you know, when they do the belly bump, too. But it's a little bit too much, maybe, in this one.
Well, this movie critic found the characters so disgusting I had no empathy for them, but it had a few laughs, so I rated it halfway up the hill.
Halfway. Well, I think you're being generous, but that's okay.
Yeah.
So we got Talladega Nights halfway up the hill.
Yeah,
so
it's a PG-13. PG
oh, okay.
Columbia Pictures. And then I saw a movie called Conversations with Other Women, and then I saw a movie called World Trade Center. Which one would you like to talk about first?
Let's do the Conversations with Other Women. Was it about women talking with each other?
You would think that from the title, huh?
Yeah.
From the title of the film, you would think it's about a group of women getting together for a gab fest.
Wrong!
It's
really?
Not about that at all. It's about a couple, Helena Bonham Carter and Aaron Eckhart. And they had fallen in love in their early 20s, but they didn't get married. And then they meet again 15 years later at a friend's wedding, and their attraction to each other is reignited. And this is a slightly different movie, as it is filmed in split screen. And the conversation is between Helena when she was younger and the totally different, more mature woman she is now.
So you're seeing two things going on at the same time?
Yes.
That's sort of like trying to read subtitles. I hate that.
Well, this was done, I think, better than most split screens that I've seen in the past. But presently, she is married with children and does not want to leave her husband. Now, Aaron Eckhart is engaged to a college girl 15 years younger than he is.
Oh, surprise, surprise.
But he is still so much in love with Helena that he would like their encounter to be much more than a one-night stand.
Uh-huh.
And thus, it's interesting to see the one-night stand become more intellectual than sexual.
Huh.
And the dual-frame filming that shows what happened in the past with what's happening now in the present, it is a bit distracting, but it's still different enough and interesting enough to take Conversations with Other Women three-quarters up the hill.
Well, now that's pretty good for you.
Yeah, I thought, well, this is different enough, and it's interesting enough. Three-quarters would be like a 7 on a 1 to 10.
So it didn't get confusing by having the split screen like that?
It didn't really get confusing. It was just distracting.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't as confusing as it was like you felt like one eye was watching one thing and one eye was watching the other.
Oh, boy, I'd have problems because I wear one contact, and I have to see both of them so I...
Yeah, you and me are the same. I'm nearsighted in one eye and farsighted in the other.
Can't do that, man. I'm going to go crazy in this movie.
Well, this movie is unrated. I can understand why. I wouldn't know how to rate it. But it's by Fabrication Films, which is a small studio.
Well, at least it's something different for a change instead of another sequel.
Yeah, right. That's what I thought. I thought, well, at least this isn't another sequel. Because I'm sure tired of seeing sequels and also-rans. And now to the World Trade Center.
Oh, yeah. Now, that one has been touted as being an excellent, excellent movie.
Yeah. Well, Nicolas Cage, Michael Peña, and Maria Bello star in this film. And I think most Americans would remember where they were and how they felt when they saw the horror at the World Trade Center on September 11th, 2001.
Oh, yeah.
Personally, I became so depressed I got pneumonia because I knew that this was the beginning of World War III.
No kidding. You really did.
Yeah, I did. I got really depressed, and I know better than to do that. But sometimes, you know, I do get emotionally involved when I see the world destroying itself.
Well, there are certain things in life when it happens, like when Kennedy was assassinated. I think everybody remembers where they were, what they were doing when that happened.
Yeah.
Same thing with the World Trade Center, you know?
I think you're right. I do remember where I was. I was taking a bath when I heard about Kennedy being assassinated, and I was shocked.
I was sitting in a physics class in high school.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think later when I found out that this so-called 9/11 tragedy was done by religious fanatics, at least that's what they told us, I couldn't believe people were that stupid in the 21st century.
Oh, please, you should understand when it comes to utilizing, and I think it's true, it's a political thing, it's a power thing, they just use religion as a whip.
I think you're right. I just think it's terrible the way they march with God in front of them, you know, to hide the real motives and the real truth behind what's
sure.
happening.
You've got to blame God, and it's ridiculous, you know. It's power. Everybody wants power, money and power, and
yeah.
Nobody looks at the good of the common person anymore. They're expendable.
Well, you're right. What unfolded was man's inhumanity to man.
Yeah.
And what we see in this film, though, is man's humanity to man.
Great.
Yeah, it tells one of the many stories of heroism by the police and the firemen who were there. They were the first responders to the scene, and they bravely and willingly risked their own lives to save others. And Nicolas Cage and Michael Peña are two Port Authority police officers, and they're called to sacrifice themselves on that fateful day. And I think director Oliver Stone has done an excellent job of chronicling what happened when tons of concrete and steel came crushing down on these men. And they were buried like 20 feet below street level.
Wow.
For more than 24 hours. And we see what keeps them alive. And when all hope seems to be gone, how they just seem to be hanging on, you know, to life. And I expected World Trade Center to be a political film, but it's not a political film. It is an intensely human story that shows there are still some good people left, and hopefully there's more good people left than bad people, and I think it deserves a top-of-the-hill rating.
You know, I am so glad you said that, because you're right. It could have easily been a political film. And, you know, the people who were actually there, the firefighters, the Port Authority, those who went in to that building knowing full well they might not walk out again.
Yeah.
You know, it's more. It's much, much more than that, because a lot of those men, and some women too, but mostly the men, they're still suffering today because of the fumes and everything. They're finding all kinds of lung cancer and terrible diseases as a result of that.
Yeah, not just the emotional suffering, but the physical suffering that these poor men and women, some women went through this too. And this is rated PG-13. It's a Paramount Pictures film. But I really think that Oliver Stone did an excellent job on this one.
Well, you know, it's about time. We need something that has a positive bent on it, that has still the stimulation of wanting to sit there and watch it, and you want to be there, you want to be a part of it, you become a part of it, and you have the emotional part that goes along with it. However, it needs to be more than just, well, here's another movie, just to do a movie.
Yeah.
This should give inspiration not only to those who were there and their families, but also to young people who are going to be growing up into a society that's left as a result of that.
I like this film much better than that Flight 93 film they made, which I didn't think was well done. It wasn't filmed well. The camera was circling around too much, and the story was, you know, chopped up. It wasn't a good film, Flight 93, and it was very depressing, of course. But this one, it sort of gives you hope for the future, that there are more good people than bad, and you have that emotional feeling of, oh, thank God, there's somebody out there that's good.
Don't you love it when there is a movie that really moves the emotions? It gets the emotions going, because it seems like anymore everything is so superficial. You go into a movie that you're laughing because it's a nervous laugh. or you're seeing some crazy crack-up or another explosion to make it exciting for you. This one touches on people, stories, emotion, and you got to go deep inside for that one.
Yeah, that's right. It really is an interesting film to see, too. And I think it should be shown to everybody in America, because this country was attacked, whether it was from political gain or religious problems or whatever. We were attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And being attacked like we were, our government should have stood up and said, this is World War III. We've been attacked just like Pearl Harbor.
But, you know, we were attacked twice before at the World Trade Center. And
yeah.
This was just a bigger one.
This was a monumental one. Flying airplanes into the Trade Center was, that's why I think this government should be ashamed of itself, the way it's acted.
Well, we need to really find out what's going on in the world today and what is going on in the hearts and souls of the people, because I'm sick and tired of politicians. I don't even want to deal with that.
Yeah.
You know, they're out for their own good, for their own getting exaltation.
Greedy, selfish gain again. All that greedy, selfish gain.
It is. It has nothing to do with the people. If the people could run the world, we wouldn't have any wars.
Yeah. It's that old world power, you know, it's like watching a James Bond movie and fighting the guy that wants to control the world again like Hitler.
Yeah, and it's just insanity that's going on. The world seems to be blowing up around us. Something has got to happen to stop all this insanity and go back into what the universe meant for us, is to survive, is to get along, is to share with one another. All that's gone right now.
I know. I think we need more intelligent women in politics. I really do. I mean, if you and I could run for office, we would think the world would be a heck of a better place to live in.
Well, they're always afraid that a woman won't push the red button. Well, yeah, that's a good idea. Wait, don't be pushing the button first and then talk later.
Yeah, it's like this government we have now, it says they're protecting the country, and meanwhile our borders are still open.
Mm. Well,
know.
Talking about port authority, our ports are probably more porous than any border.
Yeah, well, no, I think it's about the same. And it's terrible that they are such propagandists. And I guess the public believes them, because the people don't seem to be up in an uproar marching in the streets.
Called
sheeple. Like the Mexicans did in Los Angeles to say that they want Mexico here, and they got Mexico here.
Well, people are sheeple. They follow along. It's easier to follow than to lead.
Yeah, that's true. Most people follow. They don't
well,
leave.
Anyway, we got three. We got Talladega Nights if you want to go stupid.
Yeah.
We've got Conversations with Other Women if you want to split your eyeballs.
Yeah.
And you got World Trade Center that'll give you some emotion. You can take away something special.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, Talladega Nights is like the Three Stooges, I swear. Pie
yeah.
in the face. But half of the audience was laughing, so I thought, well, I guess maybe there are a couple of funny scenes, especially when this very flamboyantly gay race driver came on into the picture.
Oh, I bet NASCAR is going to love that.
Yeah.
Amazing. Now, if everybody wants the rest of the story, plus you've got some phenomenal photos, because you get to go to so many of these get-togethers and parties and whatnot. You've got some great photos up there, and the rest of the longer version of your reviews, where do they go to?
They can go to my website, which is Devra, D-E-V as in vitamins, R-A, Devra Z as in Zoom Zoom, and then Hill, H-I-L-L, all one word, DevraZHill.com.
Well, I think you do a phenomenal job, and just to sit through some of this garbage, I got to commend you, you know?
Yeah, I tell you, I've been a movie reviewer now for some 20-odd years, and they've sure been odd.
And getting odder by the minute, right?
Getting odder every day.
Amazing. Well, Debra, I want to thank you so much. As always, you give us the good, honest, and the spiritual side, too, which I think is very, very important.
Yeah.
And, of course, you're going to be with me when we go to CRN, but I appreciate your being with me on BBS Radio and moving onward and upward.
Moving onward, and we have an entertaining month.
Take care, my sweet. Take
you
care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Debra Hill. Again, that site, it's a great site. I'm serious. There's great photos there. She has other reviews, all kinds of things. And she also has her books, because she has a book called The Best of Your Life for the Rest of Your Life. And boy, does she tell it like it is. And I mean, she pulls no punches. You're going to love that one. Again, that's Debra, Z as in Zoom Zoom, Hill.com. and I'll fire the popcorn and shoot the works on this one. Have fun. Life is worth living on Pop Off, as we're going to tell you in the next one, because how would you like to know how to have a guide, an on-the-fly guide to balancing work and balancing life? Because sometimes it gets a little screwy, doesn't it? Especially when you have family and you got job and you got work. So much to go on. But maybe we can give you some tools that will help you get there in a positive way.
About the things we've gone through, so it's hurting me. Now it's history. I've played all my cards, and that's what you've done through. Nothing more to say, no more ace to play. The winner takes it all. The loser standing strong beside the victory. That's our destiny. I was in your arms.
Work, work, work. Does it take up most of your life? I have to admit that it probably does mine, because I enjoy what I do. I don't call it work. I call it part of my life. Well, you know, how would you like to know how to balance work and life? Well, Bill Butterworth has some keys. He's a counselor, a teacher, a motivator, and Bill tackles the problem in On-the-Fly Guide to Balancing Work and Life. Hey, Bill, nice to have you with us on Pop Off.
Hi, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me today.
Well, you know, it's absolutely amazing being able to talk with you about these kinds of things, because we do get kind of crazy. I mean, we got kids. We got the work. We've got some people going to school at the same time. We've got our own private life that we try to have. And then it gets confusing.
Well, I think you've hit the nail right on the head there, Mary Jane. I'm telling you, I've been on the road talking about balancing work and life for almost 20 years now. And that's the result of this new book that we're talking about this hour. But, you know, in 20 years, I've discovered that... I think part of the reason balance is so difficult is you never really get it completely nailed down. The fact that you have a balanced Monday is no guarantee that you're going to have a balanced Tuesday.
When you think you got it right, it goes flying out the door.
Right. It's not one of those things that you can make kind of a one-time commitment and then it all falls into place. There are plenty of things that occur in our everyday lives, and many of us buy into the myth that, you know, it's going to be better in another phase of our life when the kids get older, or when I get the promotion, or when I retire. And you know what? That's simply not the case either. At any of those stages or phases of life, balance is just a really tricky thing. It's like nailing Jell-O to a tree. You know what I'm saying? It just doesn't stay put.
I hear you loud and clear. And you know, Bill, I remember now, you know, I'm getting up there in years. And I remember a time when they said, you know what, you got to get ready, because there's going to be a time when you're going to have maybe a 30-hour week. You're going to have all this leisure time where you're going to be able to do all these wonderful things. You got to get ready for that. What happened, Bill?
I think you got a bad case of the normals there, Mary Jane. It's all the great planning, all the good ideas, all the wonderful intentions that we have. Life is just so demanding, and as you mentioned right out of the gate here, so many of us struggle with balance, and it's not because we have a lot of bad things in our life. It's because we have a lot of good things. We want to be good at our vocation. We want to be a good spouse or significant other. We want to be good parents. We want to be active members of the community, our church, our synagogue, you know, our temple, wherever it is. We want to coach Little League. We want, you know, all these things are good, but we just run out of time in the day to do everything. And so, you know, in the book, I kind of break it down into three maladies that we all suffer from, and I give them real, you know, official titles. We have.
Before we get to that, though, Bill, I got to ask you: isn't it true that sometimes we attempt, we want to be perfect at everything? And I think women are probably more guilty of that than anything. You know, they want to be the best mother, the best wife, the best worker, the best everything. And you can't be perfect at everything all the time.
That's right. I mean, it's kind of a cousin to the question, do you think it's really possible to have it all? You know what? I think it really is possible to have it all. I'm just not sure you're going to have it all at the same time. It might take a little planning, and it might take a little long-term endurance, but you're right. I think we need men and women both need to understand that a perfectionistic approach to life is just going to frustrate us and make us you know, yearn for a different kind of life. So kind of letting go of things, and I'm not talking about becoming shoddy in our work, and I know you're not advocating that either, but
no.
More realistic approach to life in being, less perfectionist is going to give us an opportunity to have a more balanced life.
Now, Bill, I love two of the areas, and you got to explain to us what you mean. You got the hazies, and you got the crazies.
Yes. The hazies, real simple definition, haziness is defined as losing sight of the goals in our life. I, like everybody else, have probably at one point or another heard someone, challenge me to get my priorities nailed down. And I've been able to figure out what's most important to me in life, and most of us have. And we've written them down in the front page of our journal, and we've had them done with calligraphy and framed on the credenza of our desk, and we've got soaring eagle posters that reflect our priorities. We know them. We just get distracted from living them. Haziness is kind of like a fog or a smog or a haze that comes in and blurs our vision from what we know to be important. So the antidote to that still includes the idea of priorities, but it's going one step further. We pursue them and we practice them. It's the whole idea of balance is something that you've got to get intentional about, Mary Jane. It's not just going to happen for us. Someone's not going to just hand it to us. We're going to have to work at it, become very intentional in our ability to be a balanced person. And, of course, with the whole priorities thing, as you know, with the book in front of you, I've broken it down into kind of a triangle,
right,
where we have three aspects in our life: attention, connection, and reflection. Attention refers to the tasks that we have to do in life. Connection has to do with the relationships that we have to have in our lives. And reflection has to do with the private time, the times of meditation and reflection and quietness where we kind of get our act together. And
who's got time for that?
Well, that's the issue. It is the most overlooked part of life in our culture. And I'm suggesting that if you don't make time for it, you're never going to have a balanced life because
Good.
You are going to be run by all the urgent things in your life as opposed to the important things in life. And so if I can start each day, or if I'm more of a night person, before I go to bed each night as I think through tomorrow, if I can think through, okay, here's what I have, this is what I have to do, and of course I talk in the book about we have a tendency to be more either task-oriented or relationship-oriented. So if I'm more task-oriented, I need in my time of reflection to say, okay, I've got to be a little bit more connected tomorrow. I've got to relate to people more intentionally. And if I'm more relationship-oriented, I say at the beginning of the day, okay, look, I've got to maybe close my door today for a couple hours till I get these tasks done that have been assigned to me. I mean, it's difficult, Mary Jane, but it's not rocket science. I mean, people, if they just get intentional about it and take some private time to kind of plan it out, there's a much greater opportunity that it's all going to fall into place than if we don't plan it out.
And I would also think, too, and tell me if you don't think this is right, when we balance, when we do all these things, don't feel guilty about what you're doing.
Exactly. Absolutely. I mean, one of the other triangles we talk about includes the whole idea of fun or leisure in life. And, of course, that's the other great American rip-off is we feel like we have to kind of sneak recreation into our schedule, because if anyone found out that we actually were taking some time off, we'd be considered lazy or good for nothing, or
yeah,
just enjoying a luxury time of life rather than a necessity. I mean, fun. Recreation is a necessity. Think of the word recreation. Recreate. We kind of re-energize. It's a battery charge. It's kind of jumper cables from heaven, if you will, that zap us and give us the recharge that we need to approach the next days ahead of us. So,
because if you don't do that, you're going to burn out.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's your choice. I mean, as we point out in the book, the overarching metaphor for the book is life is like a race. So what kind of race are you running? A marathon or a sprint? You run the races two very different ways. If you want life to be a marathon, and who wouldn't, you can't run it like a sprint. You'll run as fast as you can for as long as you can, and you'll burn out miles before your race is through. And regrettably and unfortunately, we all know people in our lives who have experienced heart attacks or some sort of burnout physically, emotionally, or mentally because they just didn't learn how to pace themselves and how to think of life as a long-distance race and not just a sprint.
Now, what about the crazies? I think I faced a few of those.
Craziness is defined as a lifestyle that's out of control. It's the person who says, you know what, you got me nailed to the wall here, Butterworth. I am an imbalanced person. But I'm not sure I even know where to begin. It's just so overwhelming. And, of course, the answer to that is the runner's equivalent to balance, and it's the word pacing, P-A-C-I-N-G. The only way you're going to run a long-distance race is not to give it all out in the first lap or two, but to pace yourself. And the pacing triangle is very, very significant. Three elements, learning, labor, and leisure. And it's very clear in our culture. Instead of being something that we balance in life, we make them three seasons of our life rather than having all of them in concert at lifelong learning, lifelong labor, lifelong leisure. We go to school when we're kids, we work when we're adults, and then we retire when we're older adults. And that's no way to live. You'll never make it to retirement if you live that way. All three areas in all three seasons of your life.
I also find that, unfortunately, when you go to school, you're told what to do, the bell rings, you know what class you're going to, the teacher tells you what to learn and how to do your life. But the problem is then when you get out of school and then you really start facing life, you have to have a discipline about that life. And then, again, you go to work, somebody tells you what to do, and when you're out of there, again, it's these two things pulling at each other. You know, one says, okay, here's your structured life, and then here's another one that says, okay, now it's up to you. You've got to have the discipline to live life.
Right.
And that can be making talk about being crazy.
Right. And, you know, it's we talk about that actually in the middle one, the lazies, where it's the whole idea of eventually every person in the sound of our voices have to realize that they're going to have to one day step up to the plate and take responsibility for their own life. No matter what kind of excuse they can offer us as to why their life is imbalanced, things like, you don't understand the kind of boss I have, you don't understand what this industry is like, you don't understand what it's like to, you know, have young kids with special needs, or you don't understand. You know what? The issue is, maybe I don't understand any of those, but the issue is eventually each of us has to take responsibility for our own life. No one's going to hand us balance on a platter. We're going to have to forge it out. And I tell the corporate groups I speak to all over the country, if your life is imbalanced, you really only have three options. You either keep it the same, or you come up with a creative way to kind of back off some of the stuff at work so that you can still be effective and get it all done, but in less time. Or your third option is you leave that line of work and get into something else. And, of course, they're absolutely furious. I would never leave this job. I've worked so hard to get to where I am. And I say, well, then great. Then we're down to two. Do you want to keep it like it is, or do you want to change it? Well, I don't want to keep it like it is. I'm going to go crazy. So that's where all the old cliches kick in. We've got to work smarter, not harder. We've got to put our thinking cap on. We've got to figure out whether it's flex time or whether it's delegating more things or, you know, not taking on new tasks without releasing others. Just very good, common sense, creative ways to pull off a balanced life, or else we're going to be in trouble one way or the other.
You know, the other part of this, too, and I honestly think everybody has to do this, and it's the hardest darn thing to do. You've got to sit down and figure out who you are, what you are, where you're going and why you want to go there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, that reflects the triangle that I talk about in the middle, how to beat the lazies, is you pursue and practice endurance. And the first thing you do is what I call forecasting, which is another word for planning. You got to plan out where you want to go, you know, and then you got to focus, which is work in the plan. And then you got to kick back and enjoy the reward for that. But you're hitting a very key point. Most of us, if we're not careful and intentional, we'll just kind of float through life aimlessly. Well, what does aimlessly mean? Without aim. We never made a plan. We never figured out where we were going to go. You know, it just is one series of circumstances after another that we haven't really planned on. And that's why we're overwhelmed. And that's why we live with such imbalance. And, you know, with imbalance comes guilt and, you know, all the issues that we have to deal with psychologically, because we just don't have our life put together. And how much of that would be accomplished, using your words, if we just sat down and asked ourselves those questions? So that's a beautiful reminder of what's really important in life.
And that's it. And we shouldn't think that someone else should tell us what is important. You know, we have the media coming at us. We have the print. We have television. We have radio. And everybody is trying to tell us what and who we should be. And you know what? You got to stop listening to everyone else and listen to your inner soul, your inner self, that person inside of you that tells you who you are.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. The only thing I would add to it is I do think there is some wisdom in one or two very trusted friends or a mentor, people who can see parts of our lives that maybe we can't see, those blind spots. But you're right, taking cues from the media or, you know, the last book I read or the last movie I saw, you know, that's no way to get those serious questions answered. So
I'm not saying that they're not good tools. You use them as tools. You don't use them as the Bible.
Exactly. Exactly. Perfect. I think you're really onto something there. And, you know, that's what I'm finding with people that are picking up this book. I mean, Goodnight, again, you have it in front of you. You realize we wrote it in a very brief way. It's a really thin book, a quick read, because people are too busy to discuss balance in any, you know, long form. I mean, most people are not looking for the 300-page definitive work on balance, including all the studies from Sweden on chimpanzees. You know, they're looking for more of this style, kind of less than 100 pages. Just help me get some bullet points, some easy takeaways that I can start putting into my life. And so
yeah,
that's what we tried to do.
Yeah, these are constructive solutions.
Yeah.
And that's what we need. If it's not going to be constructive, again, you don't need criticism. We get enough criticism in life. We get enough negatives every single day in life to last us a lifetime. So you need something that's constructive, not criticizing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because we don't always choose where we are. Sometimes we get dumped into it, whether we like it or not. Okay, so then just accept it. I got dumped. So, okay, now here's what the next thing I'm going to do. Move up, move on, and get your act together. And don't sit and wallow in it. Doesn't that bother you when somebody says, I'm going to whine you, oh, poor me, poor me?
Yep,
excuse
yep.
me.
And
nobody
again,
made you for you.
Stuff.
You
Take
made you for you.
Take responsibility for what's yours and let go of the things that you can't change and just move on in your life and learn lessons from the things that have happened, and you know, trust that better days are ahead, and that you can make a difference in your future, because that's absolutely the kind of message that people need to hear.
Yeah, and there's no age barrier, there's no sex barrier, there's nothing. The only barrier is that one organ you've got, and that's called your brain.
Well, now don't get too hard on this here, Mary, because I'm often told my brain isn't functioning all that well, so I'm going to get a little bit of a complex here. But
No. I think
I'm
we're
teasing.
All on and off
sometimes.
I'm teasing.
Sometime. I know
you
what
know
you're
what I
saying
mean?
And agree with you completely.
And you know what? It's good to be a little bit off once in a while. I said I was laughing last night because my birthday was on Tuesday, and my dear husband knows that when I first started television, I would always get off the air, and at the time, you're probably too young to know, but there's a candy called Chuckles. And I used to get that in the machine after every show. That was my, it was nothing but pure sugar, trust me.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember that?
I remember Chuckles. I guess I'm older than you thought I was.
Okay.
Chuckles are a wonderful candy.
And you can't find it in the stores anymore, so he bought me a case of it. And I knocked off four of those packs of Chuckles last night. And you know what? I had fun.
Well, good for you. I think you're hitting another air, just kind of giving yourself permission to kind of be real and let your hair down and, you know, have some fun. I mean, when we talk about that pacing triangle, learning and labor and leisure, and I, I go into these corporate settings and I say, when's the last time you guys and gals, you know, had some fun? And they're hard-pressed to give you the last, well, we had a golf date, but that was really a business thing because we were with a client. And, you know, when's the last time you read for the pure pleasure of reading? And they have to go all the way back to eighth grade, you know,
yeah.
Little Women. And it's like, oh, my goodness, that's a long time since you've really had some personal enrichment.
Do you have a website?
I do, BillButterworth.com.
Okay, good, 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 good. You have some good information there, too?
I do. People can see not only about the book that we're talking about, Balancing Work and Life, but there's a sister book that goes along with it, Building Successful Teams. I have lots of other resource material available, information on how to contact me to come and speak to your group, my itinerary, bios, and, you know, happy former clients and all that kind of stuff. So it's a full spectrum of stuff on my website.
Well,
everyone,
keep up the good work. God knows we need it, Bill.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I really appreciate this opportunity to be with you. Thanks for hunting me down here today and being able to have a few minutes to spend with you.
My pleasure. We'll do it again.
Okay.
Take care now.
Bye-bye.
That's Bill Butterworth. And again, the book is called it's On the Fly Guide. That's kind of like the little topic, but it's basically called Balancing Work and Life. Balancing Work and Life. And sometimes it does kind of get a little on the crazy side, but you know, you can do it. Again, his website is Bill Butterworth, and that's BUTTERWORTH, Butterworth. BillButterworth.com. And he does have some really, really good information there. And it's simple. He is right. This is not, you know, the huge book where you're going to have to read through pages and pages and pages, and then you forgot the, you know, page 1 and through 10 when you get to page 250. This is not. It's a real simple guide. It goes through the steps. It gives you the tools, and then it's up to you to implement those tools. You know, a happy person is a balanced person, and that's what we try to do on Pop Off, a little bit of balance for everyone. Okay, talking about balancing. You know, I love when I talk to Deborah Hill, because we always get into the political thing about the government and what they're doing to us and, you know, stabbing us in the back most of the time. Well, how would you like to get government out of your life? And I mean, no, you're saying it's impossible. Well, you just might not be, but you're going to have to listen up on Pop Off to find out. Talking about the heat of the night. Part of that heat is what's happening in our society today, and not only with our society, but our government, too. You know, gasoline prices are going up again. They came down a little bit, but, you know, I think they do that just to tease us a little bit with it, so that when they go back up, they can kind of come down about 3 or 4 or 5 cents, and then they go back up 20, and you still feel better than you did before because it went down, you know. So they tease us with that. But we still profess, or at least the politicians do, that we want to break our dependence on foreign oil. Then ethanol has been cited as a possibility. Can it work? Well, Marty Fritzen says no. Now, Marty has been named Financial Executive of the Year. He's done his homework for us in his book called Unwarranted Intrusion, The Case Against Government Intervention in the Marketplace and Our Lives, too. Marty, nice to have you with us on Pop Off.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
You know, when we talk about the government, you know, it was meant to be that the government was going to do nothing more than protect us and give us an opportunity to be successful and to do the best that we possibly can be. Where did we go wrong? The government is into everything. They're in our education. They're in our pocketbooks. They even want to be in our bedrooms.
Well, we only have ourselves to blame, really. We have to all be vigilant and say, and be fair about it and say we don't want preferences, we don't want subsidies, we don't want extra benefits for any group, but we have to be willing to give those up ourselves. We really have to be consistent, and yet what we find in reality is that every group is out there, and it's not a matter of Republicans or Democrats, liberals or conservatives, under various guises, many different interest groups are successfully getting preferences for themselves built into the tax code and into various subsidies that are handed around. And the only way out of that is really to take that all off the table and say we're going to rely on government for the things that only the government can really do effectively, such as national defense. It should be providing courts and enforcing contracts. But beyond that, there really has to be a very strict test. Does the proposed intervention by the market address some genuine demonstrable market failure?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you say some pretty outrageous things like, you know, government should stop inducing people to save, it should stop insuring bank deposits, it should stop trying to save family farms, it should do less to encourage home ownership. Well, that's the American way.
Well, a lot of those have become identified with the American way because they've been marketed very effectively. But really, if you take a look at, for example, the deposit insurance, this is a fairly modern idea in the sense of being done on the federal level, but it was tried twice in the 19th century on the state level and was a miserable failure. Now, I certainly think that it's a good idea to have a sound banking system and to have a safe savings vehicle where people won't have to worry at all about their savings disappearing, but there are actually better mechanisms than deposit insurance, which have been tried, which were outlawed by the federal government, never tried, because it's better from the politician's standpoint to have the control. The real reason for deposit insurance was that the small banks, which were becoming progressively less safe as a result of natural development, you know, there were no bank failures during the Depression in Canada because they had allowed the bank consolidation to go through in a natural way so that banks weren't vulnerable to failure because they were in one little town where if the main employer had a layoff, the bank would certainly fail. So it's really interference with those kind of processes for the benefit of special interest groups that leads to this perception that this is something that's always been around and is just a natural way to go.
Now, I also have to say, you one thing that you address, and that's you say that what can possibly have, what would you have against supporting the arts? I mean, culture seems to be essential in life, and I'll be honest with you, in this country, if we don't have something to support the arts, and I mean, you know, the operas, the symphonies, it's going to go away because this country does not support the arts at all. And I'm telling you, I hate to have kids growing up totally art bankrupt.
Well, I agree with you completely. The arts are very important. I'm on the board of one arts organization. My wife, who's a professor of music, and I are, I mean, she's giving a lecture at the Mostly Mozart concert this evening. So we're very much supporters of the arts. The question is, what should the role of government be? And 150 years ago, a writer by the name of Frédéric Bastiat in France made the very same point and said that, yes, I realize people will misrepresent my viewpoint as being against the arts. That's not the case at all. The real issue is that once the government gets involved in funding the arts directly and through programs such as the National Endowment for the Arts, then the government is deciding what art is, and even worse, deciding what good art is. And the result is your tax dollars going to art that you may object to very strongly. We've had tremendous controversies in this country for a number of years over art that in some cases people viewed as obscene. Well, they don't have to patronize it, but they also shouldn't have their tax dollars going to support it. There's other art that may be equally offensive to other people just because it's bland and uninteresting, not that the question of being obscene. But people should have the right to choose the art that they enjoy.
Do you honestly think that this country, on a private basis, would support the arts enough that it will survive?
Well, we find arts. I talk in the book about one donor, for example, who said that she just believed that a particular playwright's work should get produced on its merit, and she was willing to underwrite it to a very sizable number. Patrons of the arts clearly who underwrite art exhibitions don't intend to go every day, all day, which they would have to justify what they're paying. If it was a matter of their own enjoyment of the art, they're clearly willing to subsidize others to enjoy the art. So I think it's up to those of us who are involved in arts organizations to find the audience, educate the audience in the case of classical music, and generate the support in that way.
We don't even do it in the schools anymore. Kids are not exposed to arts and music. It's all gone. That all goes by the wayside. Now what?
Well, I think that that gets into some very serious issues of education, how education is delivered. And I didn't really go into a lot of the question of privatizing the school system, which there are many who would support strongly. I certainly do support having funding for education, but I think that education could be provided much more cost-effectively than the way it's typically done in the United States. And then some of the things you're talking about would not be regarded as frills, which is the term that gets applied to some things that I happen to think are very important.
I agree. Now, you also said that family farms should be able to survive on their own and the government shouldn't be supporting them. I don't think we could afford fruits and vegetables if they do that.
Well, I would have to say just the fruits and vegetables aren't really subsidized to any great extent by farm price supports. It's really grains, sugar, cotton, a few limited crops, which makes it even more unfair. The reality is that farm prices are much higher than they should be. Food prices are much higher than they should be because of artificially propping up small, inefficient farms. If the government's trying to save the family farm, it's about 200 years too late because at the beginning of the Republic, the vast majority of people were working on the farm because the most that one farmer could support was his own family and maybe one additional city dweller, whereas now one farmer can support 50 or 100 city dwellers. So because of their own increase in efficiency, they've reduced the need for the number of the people in the workforce involved in the farm. As a result of milk price supports, many elderly and youngsters in this country are deficient in calcium, a very serious problem as a direct result of this artificial effort to prop up the family farm.
Now, last but not least, because we only have about a minute or so left here, but this is something that we have in our own backyard. We're talking about a sports stadium in the Sacramento area. I agree with you 100%. I don't think we should support, with our tax dollars, a sports stadium. If it's good enough, then it should be done in the private sector.
Well, that's how it was done for the first 90 years of professional sports until the owners, who, bear in mind, have to be pretty wealthy to own a team in the first place, managed to convince people that the government ought to pay for it. It's ridiculous. The economic studies done over many years show very clearly that it's not a good investment in terms of economic development, job creation, or anything else.
Now, do you have a website, by the way?
Yeah, the website is www.martinfridson.com. The name is Fridson, and you can find out about the book and other things I've written as well.
Fantastic. Marty, you got to come back and visit again.
Oh, I look forward to it.
We got to get that government out of our pocketbooks and especially out of our bedrooms, you know?
Here, here.
Have a wonderful day.
Thanks, you too.
Take care. Again, that's Martin Fridson, F as in Frank, Ridson, and that's martinfridson.com. Name of the book again, Unwarranted Intrusions. And as always, at the end of the show, I always tell you, I will put all this up on popoff.com and make sure that all that information will be there, the names of the books, the websites, phone numbers, anything that we have. You know, Popoff wants you to be in charge. So if you go to popoff.com, I promise I'll keep all the information up. Thank you so much for being a part of the Popoff Radio Show for as long as we've had our run here at BBS Radio. Again, thanks to Don and Doug. It's been fun. Great support from my wonderful husband, Rick. And as always, I want you to have a wonderful, wonderful life. That's what it's all about, folks. I want you to think positive. I want you to look forward. I always want you to say, yes, tomorrow, over the hill, over the rainbow. It's always going to be there for you if you just believe. Keep saying that, I believe, and you will make it happen. I promise you. Again, go to popoff.com. I'll keep you posted on my new digs at Cable Radio Network. In the meantime, live simply, laugh often, love deeply, and above all else, dare to dream. It's all about you, you know.
Dreams that you dare to dream really do come true. Someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind. Troubles melt like lemon drops away above the chimney tops. That's where.